Welcome to Cultivating Hearts. We're in the studio with Janelle and myself, Sandy, and Miss Tara. And last week, if you were listening, Tara ended with a question. And it was a great question, too, for all of us to just ask ourselves. And I'll put it for myself. When I talk to other people, am I speaking to them through the Holy Spirit? Or am I speaking to them through myself? And then they're going to feel condemned, where with the Holy Spirit, they will feel convicted.
Right. It's not my place.
Right.
And that's the beauty of the passage that we're studying this month in Mark 10, 35 through 45, when Jesus is interacting with the two brothers, James and John. And James and John approach him and say that they want to sit on his right or left. And you know, when Jesus asked them, because they had a question, and that's their answer of what they want. And Jesus is like, no. It's not for me to decide if you're going to be on my right or left. You know, in fact, that's something God determines. But you will partake in the cup and baptism. He asked them, are you willing to do that? And they're like, yes. And he's like, you will. And the other disciples are hearing this, and they're just, indignant about it. And then Jesus pulls all the disciples in and begins to talk with them. And he's pondering with them, you know, what other rulers are like. And then he tells them, and he says, you know that those rulers of the Gentiles, they dominate and they use their high position as power and authority to exercise over men, but you're not allowed to be like that. He says, I want you to know that whoever wants to be great must be a servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave to all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And he gave his life as a ransom for many. And so may God honor the telling of his word. He is wanting them to grasp this. And he could have condemned them. He could have said, guys, have I not just told you, like I just for the third time told you, I'm going to die, I'm going to rise, and you're not getting it. Where's your thinking cap? You know, whatever. He didn't. He was very gentle and allowed the conversation to be what brings about the conviction, not a condemnation on his part. And I don't know that I have grasped how to do that yet. You know, I pray that somehow in my teaching and speaking, I know that something happens when you are passionate about something, it can make people feel condemned as if you're doing it, and that not be your heart. I know that's a scary thing, because the word passion actually means to suffer. Mm-hmm. And this particular passage is called in my Bible suffering service. And because that's what this is all about. He is trying to reveal to them what is going to be expected of them. And so what I did is I was going through and I thought, well, if I could just sum up in some words what I would use to describe, and then we'll go in and we'll in detail look at each of these. What happened? I would say that this was a passionate prediction, is what he gave, you know, leading up to it. It's a private request, an invitation to suffering, and that's personal, a voluntary drink to judgment, ignorance, same fate, denied positions of honor, indignant brothers, and disharmony diversion. That was my summation of how I would look at describing what occurred in this. And so I want us just to take the time, and we're going to break each of those down. The passionate prediction is Jesus told them in the verses just before in 33, 34, I'm going to die and rise from the grave kind of thing. So he's already told them what's going to happen to him. So James and John come private, and they make their request. Why do you think they went privately? Why didn't they just say it in front of the whole group?
I thought maybe they did, since the others became indignant when
they heard about it.
I didn't
heard about it.
Good point. Why do people go in private and talk? Let's think about that one.
Well, they probably had a feeling that their request was not something that the others would appreciate very much.
Well, they shouldn't, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a place for confidentiality. there's a place of, you know, it could be because they didn't want to hurt the brothers with their request. It could have been that they didn't want the brothers to know because it was inappropriate. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why a private request can be made. But I just thought I'd throw that out there. Okay. through that request, Jesus gives them an invitation to personal suffering. Why would you say I say that? It's a personal invitation to suffering. We don't go around preaching that.
Mm-mm.
Like if I stood up and all my message was is, okay, I have an invitation to you to come and suffer.
Come suffer, yeah.
But that's what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's challenging to them because, I mean, these are his friends. They aren't some random strangers that Jesus is like, well, you want to serve me? Okay, well, are you willing to suffer and die? That's not, you know, that's not his heart. He's looking at these people who he knows and loves, and they're his close group, his friends, and asks them, will you suffer and die for me? I mean, that's got to be hard for him to know that his followers are going to suffer the same fate, that they will have to experience these things as well. And he maybe, like, in the human side of him, might want them to say, no, we don't want to do that, because then they wouldn't have to.
Right.
But that admission of, yes, we're willing to drink that cup and be baptized with that, that's confirming that they will follow him to the end.
Hmm. That's huge. I remember the first time that thought came to me, an invitation to suffering. It was sitting at a wedding. I can't even remember how long Greg and I had been married. And I'm watching this young couple, you know, where she's walking down the aisle and he is looking at her. And I just started to weep.
Mm.
And, you know, weddings are a time of great celebration, a time of great joy. But it occurred to me, they're getting ready to embrace a lifetime of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Because marriage is about God making us holy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is through our spouse that God will reveal that which needs to be dealt with.
Right.
And I mean, it was like profound. I know Bill Cosby, he has a comedic act, and it is so hilarious. And he goes, you know, I think kids would think twice about getting married if we told them this is their thoughts, what it should be. You're going to look at this person and you're going to give them the ring and you're going to say, essentially, I want you to die with me.
Pretty much. It says,
you know,
death
and he's
part.
Like, I want you to walk through sickness with me, and I want you to take care of me when I don't feel good. And he was listing off all the crazy things that we don't really talk about when we're facing marriage.
You don't think of those things then.
I know.
I heard vows, but we don't recognize them.
We really don't. We really
right,
we gloss over it. And then now at Grace, as I am on a regular basis having to choose leaders, it overwhelms me at times that I know that if I am calling somebody out and saying, I recognize you are being called out into a higher level of leadership, that I am calling them out to a higher level of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the devil doesn't like that.
The devil doesn't like it.
Yeah.
I agree. But God doesn't want us to stay where we're at.
When you learn your most through that suffering.
Right.
You really do.
And so he will allow circumstances to happen to change us, to grow us. And so that's essentially what it is. He is giving them an invitation to personal suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next thing was, is it's a voluntary drink to judgment. Okay, this is interesting. In the Bible, in Jewish metaphor tradition, to drink of the cup, that has two different meanings depending on how you use it. It can be the cup of joy. Janelle, would you mind looking up Psalm 23:5? And Sandy, if you'd turn to Psalm 116:13. And we will see an example of the metaphor of the cup of joy. Psalm 23:5 and Psalm 116:13. Because in Jewish tradition, it can mean joy. All right, Sandy, you got yours? Go ahead.
I do. This is Psalm 116:13.
113?
116:13.
Right.
Got it. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Just can't read it. I will lift up the cup of salvation and call on the name of the Lord.
Yeah, great joy with that. Okay, and then Psalm 23:5.
You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to cry. Isn't that beautiful? Do you remember the last show? And I said that if we're tired because we're pouring out, it's because we are overflowing with what God's done in us. If we're weary, it's because we're not getting the pouring in to overflow. That's the difference. Right. So you can be physically tired as you're doing kingdom work, but if you're weary, then you need to know you need more inflow to the out, so the outflow won't be weariness. And so Psalm 23:5 is the visual example of that. All right, the other way, cup is used as a metaphor in Jewish tradition is to judgment, not just judgment, but divine judgment. Okay, so look up Psalm 75:7-8, and on Janelle, Sandy, I'll have you do the Isaiah 51:17-23. Right.
51.
And
okay.
The Isaiah passages, the 51:2-3. If you really want to see all that Jesus has gone through for us, this is just incredible prophecy of what's to be and the beauty of it. Do you got it, Janelle? 75:7-8. You got it?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. But it is God who executes judgment, putting down one and lifting up another. For in the hand of the Lord there is a cup with foaming wine, well mixed. He pours out from it, and all the wicked of the earth shall drain it down to the dregs.
Okay. Go ahead, Sandy.
Awake, awake, rise up, O Jerusalem. You have drunk from the hand of the Lord, and cup of his wrath you have drained to its dregs. The goblet that makes men stagger. Of all the sons she bore, there was none to guide her. Of all the sons she reared, there was none to take her by the hand. These double calamities have come upon you. Who can comfort you? Ruin and destruction, famine and sword, who can console you? Your sons have fainted. They lie at the head of every street, an antelope caught in a net. They are filled with the wrath of the Lord and the rebuke of your God. Therefore, hear this. You afflicted one made drunk, but not with wine. This is what your sovereign Lord says, your God who defends his people. See, I have taken out of your hand the cup that made you stagger. From that cup, the goblet of my wrath, you will never drink again. I will put it in the hands of your tormentors who said to you, fall prostrate that we may walk over you. And you made your back like the ground and like a street to be walked over.
Wow. That's pretty intense. Okay. But what we heard is that it's divine judgment that he gives, and that that wrath is taken care of through Christ. But if we are running towards being drunk in that which is not of God, then the wrath will come upon us. And in the Old Testament, the parallel thought to this is to be underwater was a picture of being overwhelmed by calamity. And so we heard in what Sandy read, calamity, calamity. And so what Jesus is asking them is like, are you willing? He's not referring to the joy cup. He's referring to the divine judgment of calamity. Are you willing to suffer the calamity I am going to suffer? That is what he is asking of them. And Jesus's calamity would be best described as it's bearing God's judgment for sin, that literally he is the one that would bear that for us. It's the overwhelming sufferings that are found in his death. So everything that occurs from going in before the courts of Herod and Agrippa and all of them, okay, and then the actual on the cross crying out. And so it wasn't a water baptism. It was a calamity baptism of the judgment of God for the wrath of sin. That's what he was asking them. Can you take of this cup and this baptism? And the next point was they were ignorant. Like, I didn't get it. If you could see me, I'm running my hand over my head like it's totally not there. Because they were thinking it was a messianic battle, because they were thinking it was a military campaign, it did not cross to them that, that this was about a spiritual heart condition. It was not registered yet. And so Jesus then, just instead of saying anything further, he just says it like it is. He tells them, you have the same fate. He agrees. Yes, you can. You have the same fate. And in 1 Peter 4:13, it says, instead rejoice as you share in the suffering of the Messiah, so that you may also rejoice with great joy at the revelation of his glory. The crazy gift that God gives us is that if we are willing to take of the divine cup of judgment and say, yes, I'm willing to partake in his sufferings, I'm willing to drink of what Christ did on the cross, then we get the cup of joy. It's the gift of both. And so the metaphor is joy and divine judgment, but the reality is that it's a cup that we need to have both. And so they are going to do that. So they don't know that their same fate, what they were saying, yes, I will, literally, truly was they would. And so we're told James, he's the first martyr. Acts 12:2 tells us about James being martyred. He's beheaded. Yeah. And then John's the one that suffers the most. John, they tried to kill him by throwing him in a vat of oil,
That's crazy.
He didn't die.
Yeah.
And so they put him on Patmos Island to leave him there to suffer through, like, the elements, allowing the elements. And that is where God gave him the book of Revelation. But John, and I know, it just breaks me. John, he watched every single one of them be martyred. He had to go through the suffering of seeing every single apostle
that would be
go through what they had to go through. So when he said, I will, how many times did he go back in his mind and think on what every single brother went through? And here, suffering through the vat of oil, and being on that island and saying, yes, I am still willing to take of the cup that I might know the joy. And he was given revelation. And he got to see heaven's glory open up and see what is to be with Christ's return.
That's
incredible. He was willing, and because of that, he got the cup of joy. We're so glad you're listening to Cultivating Hearts. Come back next week as we continue discussing this incredible passage of the Sons of Thunder asking a question of Jesus. God bless.